it was just a leap of faith. I don't, never done this before, don't really know how to do it, but we're going to do it and see how it goes.
And you said the story came along, so the story kind of found you.
It did, yes. Basically, kind of the beginnings of this film started actually a little over a year ago, about February of 2011. I was confronted by my pastor at my church, and with working in video and my experience in video, I do a lot of pro bono video work for the church. So they commissioned me to do a short film, roughly about 5 minutes is what they were looking for, to tell the story about this adoption from two members in the church. So sat down with them, started interviewing them and talking with them about this adoption process. And from there, we were kind of backpedaling. So I was hearing about this story about this adoption and then saying, okay, well, how did you get to that point? And from there, they were kind of backpedaling and digging further into the past. And as I was filming all of this, kind of came to the realization that, you know, putting together this adoption story specifically for the church, we can do that. But there's so much more to this story. So that kind of got my wheels turning a little bit. And a very unique thing happened, which falls right into the whole storyline of the film. The film really deals a lot with everything happens for a reason. There's a lot of signs in the film. So a sign actually happened during the production of the film as I was filming and still kind of kicking around this idea of, you know, what else could I do with this story? There was a verse of the Bible mentioned as we were filming, Jeremiah 29:11. Where it talks about the Lord is talking about, you know, I have these great plans for you, these plans to prosper and not to leave you or forsake you. And, you know, we kind of filmed. I went back to my office later that day and didn't really think too much about it. And I sat down at my desk at my editing station and I was looking at this plaque that I have on my desk. It's a sailboat. I'm a big sailboat fan. So I had this sailboat and I've had it for years. And on the sail is Jeremiah 29:11. So I look at that the same day that we filmed. And I looked at that as a sign. And I said, you know what? I've never done this before. I don't know how this is going to work out, but this is a really incredible, inspirational story. And that's a sign right there that I'm going to make a film out of this. I'm going to do a full-length documentary on this story.
And now that you've done it, you've done the full-length film, do you want to do more? I mean, has this sort of pushed you in a direction of, you know, yes, this is, you know, beyond just doing video work and doing short films, like, yes, feature film is something that I want to do with my life?
Absolutely. And even more specific to that is documentary. I've always had the feeling, even in film school, I really had the desire to be a film director, be a part of that storytelling arena. But you know, with growing up in the Midwest and everything, it's not something that everybody can do. A lot of people will aspire to be a Hollywood film director. And I was one of those types of people that I just didn't think it was in the cards for me. But I definitely wanted to work on something that was important and that I felt was worth my time. I have a lot of friends in the filmmaking industry here locally. A lot of local films get made, whether they be feature film length or short film. And I never really involved myself a whole lot into that because I would look at the story and I would say, yeah, it's okay, but it's not worth my time. I really want, you know, to do something that is really worthwhile. And when this story came along, it was just all the pieces to the puzzle were falling together. So since that, it's like I've definitely caught the bug. Absolutely.
Now, as far as, you know, documentary film goes, and I'm thinking in terms of this story, especially, there has to be, especially with an intimate story like this, a family story, there has to be a lot of trust between the filmmaker and your subjects. Did you find that that was something that came naturally, or was that something that, you know, you had to really kind of earn the trust of your subjects? Was that something you struggled with over the process?
Actually, it was very natural. Like you said, it's a very personal, very intimate story. And the way that I envisioned putting this together was very, while it's a documentary film, it's very not what I would call documentary style. A lot of documentary films all kind of have the same layout to them. And this one is laid out a little bit different. It's definitely more, you get the feeling of you're sitting in their living room with them and they're telling you the story. And it's only you and them in the room. You really get that private, intimate feeling. And with working with them, they realized how powerful this story was. They lived it. And the most interesting part about it was I'm sitting there and I'm asking them these questions to get them to talk. And I'm thinking to myself, I need to word these questions in a way to where I get great answers and I get them talking well. And the interesting thing was I was trying too hard. they literally told me, we're an open book for you. There's things about our life and things in this that we're going to talk about that most people would never talk about to not even close friends. And they're sitting here talking to the camera, knowing that anyone and everyone will see this and will be able to judge them on it even. And they sat all that aside and said, it doesn't matter. The story is too important. It could help so many people who've lived through the same things that we've lived through. And even on a more general scale, everyone can relate to suffering and hardships. And that's really the core of what the story is. They were totally open and honest about everything. So it was actually very humbling and inspiring sitting there with them as they just go through literally just airing out all this dirty laundry.
Well, then let's talk about the editing process a little bit. When you've got subjects that are willing to be so open and honest, does it then become difficult in post-production when you're trying to take, you know, all of this great material and, you know, get it into a cohesive narrative and get it down to time and all of that? Was that at all difficult, or did you once again sort of find that the pieces sort of fell in where they needed to be?
That was my greatest fear, because sitting with them, taking the time to just film them and talk with them was the easy part. Collecting that data and the video assets was all the easy part. The toughest part was sitting down and saying, is this actually going to happen? I literally filmed 90% of the film. 90% of the footage was filmed between March and April of last year. And I got back together with them to finish up filming over the summer. And it sat. And I had so much video work for my business going on that I thought, you know, my goal was to get it done before the end of the year. And November was rolling up. I was like, that's not going to happen, you know, oh well. But Thanksgiving week came up and I didn't really feel like working on actual work. I was going to take, you know, a couple days off like most everyone does, just work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I decided I'm going to start working on this film. This is the perfect time to dive into it. And I literally went through it and cut it and had a first draft done within a week.
Wow.
Of that, roughly putting in somewhere around 20 hours of work in the editing for that. So with my with my mindset of always kind of trying to be realistic and thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen, but I'll give it a crack and see how far I get. the pieces to the puzzle, it was really almost as if I was just sitting there grabbing the exact pieces that were supposed to go where they were supposed to go. And I sat back and watched it and thought, I can't believe it's done. I mean, this is incredible. So the entire process, not only the subject of the film, but even the production of the film, all fell into place. It was beautiful.
Now, Ricky, how did you get involved? Let's bring you into this. How did you get involved to do the music for this film? I know when we talked, it's been a couple months now. You mentioned to me that you were involved in a soundtrack. Tell me the story of how you got involved in this.
I don't remember the conversation the first conversation we had. Shane and I have known each other for about 10 years. Back in the day when we had like plugs and Dickie shorts and played awesome punk rock music all the time. We were in a band together. And then we kind of like went our separate ways. How long has that been? Like 10 years maybe?
Yeah, we're 10, 11,
yeah,
12.
A while ago.
Oh yeah.
And I think I may have contacted him about maybe doing some video work for Starving in the Belly of the Whale, maybe originally, I don't remember. But then he started talking to me about needing some music. And originally he just wanted me to do a couple songs, and he sent me an email with part, like, just the synopsis of the story. And we had just finished up the last album, The Journey Less Traveled, and I still had some other songs that just didn't fit on the album. And after I talked with Shane about what the movie was about, I kind of thought, even though those weren't exactly what the songs were written about, it totally fit in just the niche of the story. So I just confronted him with, I had all these other pieces too, just piano parts and guitar riffs I had written. I didn't know where they were going about just doing the entire soundtrack. So it's kind of how I got started. And then
so those pieces that you had, did you then take those pieces and adapt them to fit parts of the film? Or how did that work? Did you guys work together on sort of crafting, like, this moment needs this, will this piece
work?
Yeah,
we had a couple meetings and at his office where he just kind of went over a part of the storyboard with me, telling me the different parts of the story. And I went down to Nashville and recorded with Patrick Himes. And I knew the different parts of the movie and just sat down at a piano or a guitar, and the riffs that I had in mind for each certain part, recorded them. And I honestly didn't hear the music with the film until it was released, when I saw the premiere at the Appalachian Film Festival. So it was kind of cool for me. I was kind of, in a way, I was kind of worried, because I was like, how is he going to put my music in this film? Like, I didn't know if I was going to like the way it lined up with this story, but I mean, it fit perfect, so.
Can that be intimidating as a songwriter to sort of, you know, hand over?
Yeah, definitely.
Hand over your music.
I think I handed over about 12 songs.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, I didn't know what he was going to use with them. I didn't know. Like, I told the two that are on the Almond Tree EP, like, these were especially for the film. So I was like, try to use these in the film more than any other ones, just because, like, those are for the movie. But yeah, it was kind of weird not knowing the songs that he was going to use for different parts, but.
Yeah, I kind of kept him in the dark. I had a vision, and like you said, when we started out talking about it, I was kind of just trying to possibly just collect some music from different local artists. I definitely wanted it to be local musicians. But after talking with him and after seeing his catalog and listening to his music, I came up with the idea, let's just have Ricky score the entire thing. It would all flow very well, continuity-wise. It would be really great. Just the feel of his style worked really well, regardless of the actual subject matter of the songs. Just the style of the music fit very well. So I really just told him, you know, a handful of these songs I think will work. You know, maybe write a couple that are more specific to the film. That'd be great. And then, you know, when you're down there in Nashville recording, I was very adamant. I was like, definitely record some Rhodes piano for me, because I want that in there. That would be really slick, because I knew of certain parts in the film where that was going to work really, really well. And kind of our arrangement was, he was going to take care of doing all of that. And in exchange, I was going to take care of doing some video work for him for Starving. And interestingly enough, he ended up being in the film. We took some of the songs that we shot. We went out and shot at a really beautiful cemetery in Cincinnati. Him just with acoustic guitar singing, very nice and clean, basic filming. And after editing those for him for, you know, his personal use for his band, I thought, let's throw that in the film. That'll be really cool. It'll be a way to where we're telling the story narratively with Danny and Leslie, but then we're putting these little musical vignettes of a live performance in where Ricky's telling the story in a more lyrical, poetic way. So it's kind of, it's a documentary film, but in the same regards, it's a little bit of an art film as well.
Using different types of storytelling.
Yeah, definitely.
Using, you know, traditional documentary bits and pieces and some more artistic bits and pieces and some almost music video aspects to the storytelling.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it does not, and this has been the toughest thing so far, looking into like distribution and things like that. It's just, it's such a very specific niche, and the way it's put together is so different that it's hard for me to like talk with another filmmaker and say, well, here's what I have. What do you suggest? They say, well, you know, this is what I did with my documentary, but yours is really way different than mine. So you can't really go down the same road. So it's been a really incredible journey. Not only is this the first full-length film I've done, but every other short film or any other video piece I've worked on has always been for like a client or a customer or something of that nature where I've been commissioned to do it. This was solely mine. This was, you know, with Ricky being a musician, he can understand that it's his. His music is his. He does what he wants with it. The film was mine. So then from there, it was like, all right, I have this film. What do I do with it now? Oh, there's film festivals. Okay, we'll do that. So how does distribution work? So I'm learning all of these things as I'm going, and it's a lot of fun. It's been a blast.
Well, let's take another listen to one of the songs from the film, and then we'll come back and talk about where the folks out there listening can check out this film. This is another one from Starving in the Belly of the Whale. It's from the Almond Tree EP, and this one's called Pilgrim Song. You're hearing it on Kaleidoscope on WISO.
Tablets of stone.
Music from Starving in the Belly of the Whale. That's called Pilgrim Song, and it's from the Almond Tree EP, and we are talking about the EP and the film The Almond Tree. I'm joined once again in the studio by Ricky Terrell from Starving in the Belly of the Whale and the director of The Almond Tree, Shane Pergram. Welcome back, guys.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So tell me, where can people, if people want to check out this film, where can they do it? Are you planning on local screenings or?
Yes. We actually, since the film was finished, we've entered it into dozens of festivals. The first festival that we entered into, we got in official selection, so that was fantastic. Appalachian Film Festival, which Ricky said that was the first time he got to see it. And we also won Best Documentary at the American International Festival, Film Festival. And then what we're doing now is we're setting up local screenings. We've had a couple so far. We have one set up for this coming Monday, April 16th at 7:30 p.m., and it is in Cincinnati at the Esquire Theater, which is a really cool little theater down in the University of Cincinnati area. It is hosted by radio station Star 93.3, so if listeners are interested in coming to that screening, they'll need to go to win tickets to the Star 93.3 Facebook page. And there's some kind of little tagline they have to put in there about coming to the screening, and they'll be put in the drawing. We're also looking at doing a, for local listeners here in the Miami Valley area, this summer we'll be putting on a screening at the Neon as well. But for anybody interested in seeing it immediately right now, we do have it on video on demand with Amazon. So definitely check out our website, thealmondtreemovie.com. And from there, you can go to our Amazon video on demand. It's like $2.99 to rent. So definitely affordable. And Ricky, go ahead and tell them.
Yeah, where can we get the EP?
EP, baby.
The EP, we're releasing it on 7-inch vinyl, and we're releasing it on Record Store Day on April 21st. So it'll be available at Omega and at Toxic Beauty. I know I talked with Burris from Me and Mountains, and I know they're having a couple drawings for, I think a couple different bands are putting out some vinyl on Record Store Day. So like all of our music, it's free. I actually talked to our web design guy before we came in here, and as of 9 o'clock, you can download the album for free at starvingthebellyofthewhale.com. We are actually going to sell the vinyl records, though, for $1. If you come to the show, you can donate money, but you can get the songs free at starvingthebellyofthewhale.com.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I want to thank you guys both for coming in and telling us about the film and the music. And Ricky, I know we're going to hear some live tunes from you here in just a moment. We'll take a quick break so he can get his guitar ready and all that. And we'll be right back here on Kaleidoscope. On YSO.
The British band Van Farlow are back, and in many ways they are a different band on their sophomore album. They've hardened up their folky tendencies, adding more electric guitars and synths for a more majestic sound. We like it. I'm David Dye, Van Farlow, on the Next World Cafe.
Tomorrow afternoon at 1, right after Excursions, on your public radio station, WYSO.
Hearing voices.
And I pray
and I hope and I will do anything that you ask, but please don't make me pregnant.
Shades of Grey, Life and Choice, Pro-Life, Pro-Choice.
I just feel really awful and stupid and irresponsible.
Shades of Grey, this week on Hearing Voices.
Thursday night at 11 on your public radio station, WISO.
Hello, I'm Vic McCunis, your host for The Booknook on WYSO. Tune in for conversations with authors every week on Fridays at 1:30 and again on Sundays at 11 a.m. That's The Booknook on WYSO, and listen to our podcasts at wyso.org.
We're back here on Kaleidoscope on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Juliette Fromholt, and right now we're going to hear a couple of live tunes from Ricky Terrell of Starving in the Belly of the Whale.
Too long ago, love was just a word till I met you. Months months of sunny skies. Now the storm is on its way. But when the rain puts us to sleep, I know it'll be okay.
That was a song off of the last Storm in the Belly of the Whale album that's on the Almond Tree soundtrack. This is another song off the last album. It's called Closer Than an Enemy. You can catch all these songs at Blind Bob's this Friday. We have an acoustic show coming up. Invitation to a Bullfight's playing an acoustic set. Auburndale, Charlie Jackson, The White Suits, Tim Pritchard, We Are, The Cut and the Claret, and Denny Cotta will all be at that show. And The New Old Fashioned. So it should be a pretty good night. This is another song that's in the film. It's called Closer Than an Enemy.
In mind, though of your grace, it always seems to shine. And I know that I am lost. Without you alone, I walk. And I know that my heart's been marked. And can't you see that you were what I need? Tired but can't get out. The sight of these feelings, I never had a doubt. When I get inside of my car, the engine is running, but I never drive too far. And I know that I am lost. Without you, heart's been marked. But can't you see that you are what I need? And I know that I am lost. Without you alone I walk, and I know that my heart's been marked. Can't you see that you are what I need?
Ricky Terrell of Starving in the Belly of the Whale. You can check them out Friday night at Blind Bob's as part of an acoustic showcase. And get the Almond Tree EP. It comes out on Record Store Day. It'll be at Omega Music and Toxic Beauty Records. But you can go to starvinginthebellyofthewhale.com right now and download your very own copy of the album. And while you're online, stop by thealmondtreefilm.com and check out this film. And they will, I assume, keep you updated on the area showings and all that stuff, good stuff coming up.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Ricky, Shane, thank you guys so much for coming in tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right now, we're going to hear some music from one of the other artists that's playing Friday night at Blind Bob's, and he's going to be coming on the show in May. Here's music from Tim Pritchard's latest solo album. It's called It Shall Be Revealed.